Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. Got another great show for you today. We're breaking down the Blue Jays farm system, and to do that, we're joined by Ben Badler. Ben's done the Blue Jays system for us for a number of years. Ben, the Jays this year broke through from their mini rebuild, if you will. They made the playoffs, albeit in a shortened season, only 60 games, but they were competitive in the AL East for most of the year, despite missing some key guys due to injury. They made the playoffs. When you look at the Blue Jays top to bottom now, it seems like a lot of good pieces are in place. There's a really, really talented young group of players in the major leagues. We saw some of the young pitchers come up and make an impact this year, mostly in the bullpen, but we did see Nate Pearson make his debut in the rotation. And there's still a pretty good farm system. When you look at the Blue Jays as a whole, where they are as an organization, how do you assess them?
I think they should be able to contend, I think, for a playoff spot in 2021. Like you said, it's a good young lineup to build around with. You've got Bichette, Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez, not quite as young, but still kind of in his prime years right now. Kevin Biggio. We saw Alejandro Kirk come up and show it in some flashes toward the end of the season. Vladdy Jr. still, I mean, he's the same age as like Spencer Torkelson. I know we have really high expectations for him, and he didn't quite live up to it this season in 2020, but still a pretty good year for a 21-year-old as a whole, and I think there's a lot more upside for him that I think is going to start showing up in the next few years. So you mentioned Pearson coming up, obviously. Ryu, one of the best pitchers in baseball, so I think they still need to add more pitching. I mean, you've got guys like Simeon Woods-Richardson, somebody who'd come up and help next year, but I think they're going to need to supplement that starting rotation with some moves this offseason.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Blue Jays do. They're obviously a big market team that has very few long-term payroll commitments, so they have the opportunity to make some additions. We saw them re-sign Robbie Ray to a one-year deal after they acquired him at the trade deadline last year. Ray was better for them than he was with the D-backs, but the walks were still higher than you want to see. But I thought one of the things that was encouraging is we saw the Blue Jays get aggressive to fix their pitching staff. Hyunjin Ryu, as you mentioned last year, one of the best signings of the offseason. They acquired Tanner Roark and Chase Anderson. Those didn't work out so well, but again, they made the moves to address their issues. They traded for Taiwan Walker. They traded for Robbie Ray. It seems like this is a front office that sees that, yes, there's a really good, talented young position player core in the majors, but rather than being passive about it and just saying, oh, well, you know, we'll wait for the pitching staff to get here, they realize, hey, Lourdes Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez, these guys are in their primes. We saw Randall Grichuk have a very nice season last year, and you're going to get good production. I think one of the things that was probably most encouraging was the Blue Jays made the playoffs in a year when Vlad Guerrero Jr. did scuffle for a good chunk of the season and was just okay. Bo Bichette only played 29 games, missed more than half the season due to injury, and they didn't get the contributions they were hoping for from Travis Shaw, veteran free agent signee. Danny Jansen at catcher didn't do a whole lot. So even with some of the guys they're expecting to play big roles for them scuffling a little bit, they still were a pretty good team, a dangerous offense. They made the playoffs. Rowdy Tellez quietly had a very nice slash line last year. I feel like this is a team that they reached the playoffs, but there's still more upside here because Bichette stays healthy. Guerrero gets better and improves a little bit. Jansen hits like people think he can based on what he showed in the minors, and these young pitchers come up. This feels like a Blue Jays team that's good and still has a lot of upside in front of it.
Yeah, and a lot of those hitters, like you said, I think we expect a lot of them to take a step forward next year, just getting more big league time. We've already seen it in some flashes, like you said, Bichette not getting a lot of playing time in 2020, but that's going to change. You know, so presumably he stays healthy next year. I think there's a lot more. You know, as much talent as we've seen and production as we've seen from, you know, guys like Bichette and Gurriel, I think there's still room for, you know, guys like that or Vladdy Jr. or Kevin Biggio to continue to take another step forward in 21.
Ben, jumping into this top 10, Nate Pearson was their number one prospect coming into the year. He made his major league debut. Now, he was limited by a flexor strain in his right elbow, but he came back, made a relief appearance in the playoffs, and it was pretty nasty. He struck out 5 of the 6 batters he faced, over 2 perfect innings of relief. He was a little bit wild during his first 4 starts, but you saw the loud stuff. You saw the potential front of the rotation power arm. It just seems like it's a matter of his control. When you assess Nate Pearson, what is the likelihood that he's able to harness this power, throw enough strikes? Again, it's a major league debut stint. You never want to go too crazy in either direction on it. And in the course of ranking this top 10, was there any question about him being number one based on what he showed early in his major league debut?
Yeah, I think he separated himself from the pack in this system. I mean, it's a really good system too. I think it's still a top 5 farm system in baseball. I mean, I really like Austin Martin. I really like Jordan Groshans, but you know, Austin Martin, but in both cases, even Jordan Groshans too, not really a lot of, or not any upper level track record with those guys, other than, I guess you could call maybe the alternate site that, but even that I think would be stretching the definition of that a little bit. So you know, Pearson, the dominance that he's had through you know, the upper levels and the front of the rotation type stuff that he has, I think was a big separator for him to be number one in the system. It's you know we saw the stuff in the big leagues. It was up to 101 miles an hour. He can get swing and miss when he pitches up in the zone, nasty slider when it's on, and it's you know, he has a track record of throwing strikes throughout the minor leagues. The delivery is pretty efficient for him, so I don't think that strike throwing, you know, he did have some trouble with it in his initial stint in the major leagues, but obviously a very brief one. I mean, I think the biggest thing that brought some pause or would be a risk factor to look at is, you know, like you said, it's an elbow issue. He's not somebody who has a track record of durability throughout the minor leagues. The Blue Jays have had to manage his workload very carefully, so I think he has the stuff to pitch at the front of the rotation, but certainly I'd like to see him prove that he can hold up over, you know, 150 plus innings over the course of a full season.
Yeah, with the Blue Jays, as you mentioned, needing pitching, his development will be really key for them to watch in terms of their playoff hopes in 2021. Austin Martin was considered one of the top prospects in the 2020 draft class. He surprisingly slipped to fifth overall. The Blue Jays took him. We're very, very happy he was there. You ranked him number two ahead of Jordan Groshans. Was there a debate between the two of them? Are they in the same tier? Is Martin clearly ahead based on your discussions? How do the Blue Jays see him, and what is his future ultimately?
I think it's pretty close. Martin has probably more of a chance to play somewhere in the middle of the diamond. I don't know whether that's necessarily going to be, you know, shortstop or third. You know, he could move to third base. He could go to second base. He could go to center field. I think where he ends up playing probably just depends more on the construction of the Blue Jays roster. By the time he's major league ready, I like Bo Bichette at shortstop. So I think he probably, you know, as long as the Blue Jays keep Bichette there, he probably ends up moving somewhere else, but he could play a bunch of different positions. But, you know, the main calling card with him is his hitting ability. It's a really short swing, and he took some really disciplined at bats at Vanderbilt. And then again, when he got to the Blue Jays facing college SEC pitching to facing a bunch of guys who have, double A, triple A, MLB experience, just the quality of at bats he took there. And, obviously the sim games really, really stood out there. Groshans, I think, you know, he's a shortstop now. I don't think he's going to stay there most likely, regardless of, who else the Blue Jays have at that position. Obviously, I think his defensive profile fits really well at third base. I think he has less of a pure hitter. I still like his pure hitting ability, but less so than Martin, but with more power than Martin. So, I think, you know, at this time a year from now, or maybe even, you know, by the All-Star break next year, we could be flipping the order on them. So I do think it's pretty close between the two of them.
Austin Martin was going to be Vanderbilt's third baseman this year, but throwing strength and accuracy issues prompted them to move him to center field. How much confidence is there that he can stay in the infield? Just because, again, there was a lot of questions about his ability to make the throw across the diamond. And as we saw in college, they moved him because he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, the future lineups is it's kind of like a fun toy exercise where we're, you know, looking at who the Blue Jays have in the organization. So with, you know, with Kevin Biggio, we put him at second base. Jordan Groshans, you know, he's not really an outfielder, so move him to third base. And then, you know, the Blue Jays are kind of light on outfielders throughout their minor league system. So really Martin kind of just slid in the best, in terms of, like I was talking about before, as a puzzle piece for where he can go to put him in center field. So, but I do think he can play in the infield. It's tough because, you know, he had throwing issues this year at Vanderbilt, and they, that was a problem for him during the season. Again, the season was like a month long, so it's kind of one of those things where, yeah, maybe if he had, you know, more time to work at it, it wouldn't have been an issue later in the season. But we just don't know. I mean, he was mostly playing in the infield at the alternate site with the Blue Jays. I know they were kind of working at him, working with his footwork, just to get him to set up better and put him in better throwing position to make some more accurate throws. But I don't have, you know, we'll see next year. I can't speak with a ton of confidence to that, just because there wasn't, the season shut down early, and then all he did was go to the alternate site. So, but I do think he has the attributes. It's not really a question of arm strength for him. It's the accuracy is something that he's going to have to focus on for his development to be in the infield.
Simeon Woods Richardson was the top prospect they acquired in the deal that sent Marcus Stroman to the Mets. Was he in the tier with Martin and Groshans, or was he kind of the clear number four start of the next year? How does he fit in?
Yeah, I put Woods Richardson a cut below those two guys. I mean, I think of Martin and Groshans as, for me, I could put both of them in my top 25 overall prospects. Maybe a little aggressive for me on Jordan Groshans, but either way, those are two of the best hitters in the minor leagues. So I would put them a cut above Woods Richardson, who I like and who I think ticked up a little bit this year in terms of some of the development of his secondary pitches, but I would put him, you know, in a separate tier, a little bit below Groshans and Austin Martin.
Alejandro Kirk is one of the more divisive players. He certainly does not have the classic look of a top tier prospect, but he's always hit. He jumped straight from high class A in 2019 to the majors in 2020. Hit well, obviously a very small sample, but he's performed. And as we've always talked about, if you hit, someone will find a spot for you. You were aggressive ranking him last year, where again, we had reviews running the gamut from everyday player to minor leaguer who will not really have a position in the major leagues because there's doubts about his ability to catch. He did get behind the plate for the Blue Jays a little bit this year. How do you assess Alejandro Kirk now, just given that he reached the majors, hit in the majors, and ultimately, what led you to put him in this number five spot?
Yeah, like you said, just the track record of hitting with Kirk is really impressive. And for him to then go from, you know, it's a pretty big jump that he made too, going from high A all the way up to the major leagues with, you know, really just some, you know, he spent some time at the alternate site this year for the Blue Jays, but it's still a pretty big jump, and he looked real real comfortable handling major league pitching. He has really good hand eye coordination, really good plate coverage, really good plate discipline. It's really hard to strike him out. He makes a lot of contact and he does he's 5'8". He has a small strike zone and he plays to his strengths. He doesn't expand it a lot. What I was impressed with too, when he got to the major leagues was, you know, not that I thought he was some, you know, little slap hitter by any means, but he was driving the ball with some good impact too, to the pull side, to the middle of the field, to the opposite way too. So yeah, I mean, you look at him and it's easy to see why he's that polarizing type guy that you talked about, because it's just not, you know, he's not going to be on the cover of any fitness magazines or anything like that. But I think he's a good enough receiver to stay behind the plate. I mean, I would like to see him get into better shape, just, you know, to improve his lateral mobility and agility behind the plate, but I think he has enough to catch and just a very strong belief in his bat from everything that he's shown throughout the minor leagues, everything that he showed at the major leagues. He has a lot of attributes that you see from a lot of really, really good hitters.
Ben, Aurelvis Martinez, someone who the Blue Jays spent more than $3.5 million to sign. He joined the alternate site late in the season, really made a big impression in instructional league. Scouts I've talked to have identified him as one of the top performers there. You mentioned in your write-up, he had 4 homers in the first 2 weeks there. What is Aurelvis Martinez's potential ceiling? Because he's still very young. And as we mentioned, the 5 guys ranked ahead of him are further up the ladder. They've shown a little bit more, in some cases made an impact in the major leagues. It feels like his ceiling though is, I don't want to say as high as anyone else's in the system, but he has a chance to be a pretty special player.
Yeah, it's a guy who's got a chance to hit for power. I don't think he's probably a shortstop long term. I think the Blue Jays will give him a lot of opportunities to try to stay there, but the defensive skill set, I think, projects really well at third base if they want to move him there. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, we probably say this about a lot of different players, but like, man, I wish we could have seen what he could have done during a normal 2020 season, because it's hard to say he would have been higher on this list, just there's some pretty talented players ahead of him. I think in, you know, most systems, he'd probably be a top five prospect in that system. And it was the same signing class as, you know, Marco Luciano and Noel V. Marte. And, I, you know, I'm not saying he's in the Marco Luciano tier of that class, because Marco Luciano is really, really special. But I know I don't think he's too far away from Noel V. Marte. I don't think he's the athlete that Noel V. Marte is, but Martinez is a really good hitter, understands the strike zone, a lot of bat speed, power, really good last year in the Gulf Coast League as a 17-year-old, and was keeping that up this year at Instructional League for the Blue Jays. So, yeah, he's somebody who I think right now is kind of on that periphery of being a top 100 prospect, and I think we could see him you know, jump into that top 100 real soon.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the top 100. The top five players in this system are top 100 prospects. Martinez, as you mentioned, is kind of on the fringes of it. It does feel like this is the point where the top 100 candidates kind of end and we move into the next tier, starting with Alek Manoah at 7. That's at least how it looks from the outside looking in. Is that an accurate read on it?
So I could see, I mean, and it's tough this year, you know, in part two, because, you know, we had a few guys graduate, but not as many as, you know, we normally would churn through a normal year. And we're adding all the 2020 draft picks to it. So it's probably a little bit harder than normal to crack a top 100. But, you know, I think Manoah and Gabriel Moreno are probably like right on the cusp of it, or are guys who could pretty quickly jump into that top 100 by, you know, by, let's say, May in 2021. Just again, assuming we have a normal start date to the minor league season, which is not a given next year. You know, Manoah was the, you know, 11th overall pick in the draft in 2019 out of West Virginia. Big power arm, and then Gabriel Moreno. I mean, he may have been, you could argue he was the top performer for the Blue Jays at the alternate training site this year, but with the caveat that he got there kind of late, so he didn't have quite as much playing time. But he made a real loud impression during his time there at the alternate site for the Blue Jays. Really good hand-eye coordination. Puts the bat to the ball, is kind of made some swing adjustments that, you know, just from watching some of the video that I was able to see from him at the alternate training site this year, you can see the, you know, the difference in his swing from where it was a couple years ago. He's made some really positive strides there to try to drive the ball with impact and not just, you know, put the ball in play like he was trying to do a couple of years ago. So, and he still has that hand-eye coordination to make contact, but he is, I think, driving the ball with some more impact and really, really athletic too behind the plate. So that's somebody where, you know, I think you could argue to move, you know, him higher up the list, but, you know, it'd be hard for me to move down guys like, you know, or Elvis Martinez or Kirk or Woods Richardson. So it's just, again, it's just why I think it's one of the better farm systems in the game when you're going that deep and talking about guys who are, you know, either top 100 guys or kind of guys who are right on that periphery of being in the top 100.
And I think what gives a lot of people confidence is we've seen the Blue Jays bring up a very, very talented young homegrown core. I mean, we talked about the start of this podcast, but Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Rowdy Tellez have all turned into nice performers for them. Lourdes Gurriel was a bit different as kind of a big-time Cuban signing, but again, guy they brought up through their system, he contributed. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is still doing some good things, although there are things he needs to clean up. And Danny Jansen is their starting catcher, even though he hasn't hit as well as maybe a lot of people hoped. This is a very, very homegrown group, so it does feel like there's a reasonable amount of confidence that the Blue Jays will get the best from their prospects, which does factor into trying to project who are the 100 current minor leaguers who project to have the best major league futures, which is what the top 100 prospects is.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's they have that homegrown core right now at the major league level, especially in the lineup. I think the pitching they're going to need to supplement, whether it's through, you know, trades or free agent signings. But I mean, we're talking about this system here. I mean, you know, they have, you mentioned Jansen, they have Kirk coming, they have Moreno, you know, they have a bunch of different options, whether it's, you know, trading one of those guys, trading a guy like Aurelvis Martinez, or, you know, maybe it is even trading a guy like Austin Martin or Jordan Groshans. I mean, they have a lot of they have, you know, really good prospects, and they have some depth to it too. I think they have some, you know, balance throughout the system too, even beyond the top 10 guys, just, you know, from the, I guess, AAA level or whatever we want to call it this year, down to the, you know, lower level guys who are at instructional leagues. So I think we'll probably, you know, you'll see them bring up some more of these guys, but I think, you know, whether it's to bring up that starting rotation through free agent signings or trades, they have a lot of different ways they could go to really help that, to really help supplement that roster for this coming year.
Yeah, again, we saw them be willing to spend money, giving Hyunjin Ryu the contract he did last offseason, re-signing Robbie Ray. There's a lot of different avenues they can attack this. You mentioned the depth of this system. The top 10 here wraps up with Adam Klofenstein and Miguel Giraldo. How many other players were in contention for the top 10?
Yeah, I think you could go a few more guys deep. I mean, CJ Van Eyck, certainly, you know, the top 50 overall pick in the draft. But it'd be hard for me to put him over, say, like Adam Klofenstein, who already has a pretty good track record up to the Northwest League, and then was pitching this year in the Constellation Energy League, just as I expected to be writing reports on that when we came into the season. So, you know, he pitched there and saw a little bit of a velo bump, nothing huge, but, you know, it'd be hard for me to put him over him, it'd be hard for me to put Van Eyck over Klofenstein at this point. So you've got, Miguel Giraldo, but you got other guys in the system. I mean, look, we're waiting for Eric Pardino, who, you know, a couple of years ago, obviously was really, really, really good. And then last year, I don't think his stuff was at 100%. So you're hoping that, you know, him coming back from TJ, his stuff looks more like it did a couple of years ago than it did in 2019. Otto Lopez is playing winter ball right now. Not the flashiest guy by any means, but somebody who's got a pretty good track record of hitting so far. Position, you know, maybe stretched thin at shortstop, but somebody who can play somewhere in the dirt. Leonardo Jimenez put on some good strength this year. You're starting to see him be able to drive the ball with some more impact at instructional league. And you've got some, you know, super young guys in the system. You know, like a Steven Machado, Victor Mesilla, Raquelvin DeCastro, Dasan Brown. You know, those are some pretty interesting young guys lower in the system, but still a little bit of a ways away, and a kind of a want to see them perform more before you jump them into a top 10, especially a strong top 10 like the Blue Jays have.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of talent here, a lot of depth. And as we've mentioned, the Blue Jays appear to be in a good place in terms of a winning product in the major leagues, a good farm system. That's where every team wants to be. And now we'll see what steps they can take forward here moving into 2021. Ben, any final thoughts on this organization as a whole?
Yeah, so, you know, we ranked them, I think, as a top five farm system in baseball this year. And, you know, obviously there's not a ton of changes happening, but throughout the season, but not really any major graduations, I don't think, off the top of my head. You know, obviously Pearson's still eligible, and then you add Austin Martin into that mix, so it only gets stronger for them. So I still think, to me, this is one of the better farm systems in baseball, which, like we were talking about, to go with that young lineup they have. I mean, this is the window is starting to open up for the Blue Jays to start you know, being serious contenders, I think, for a playoff spot over these next few years.
Yeah, again, obviously expanded playoffs this year, shortened season. there's a lot of factors here, but there is a sense that the Blue Jays, as you mentioned, this was the start of their window opening as opposed to a team that just took advantage of a 60-game season and expanded playoff field. There's a lot of hope and a lot of reason to believe they're on the ascent, and we'll see if they can get back to the postseason over 162 games in 2021. Ben, thank you so much for your time and insight as always. We appreciate it greatly.
Absolutely. Great talking to you, Kyle.
All right, everyone. That'll do it for another edition of the BA Prospect Podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Ben Badler, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe out there.